And welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. As always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. We've got a lot of great interviews this month, but let's get started first with beer news. Senate Bill 9, the revision of Alaska's alcohol regulation, sponsored by Senator Pete Michiki, finished the regular session still in the Senate Finance Committee. Better luck next year, Senator Michiki. Stony Creek Brewhouse in Seward now has its beers on at the Firebrand Barbecue in downtown Seward. I'll be interviewing Greg Haas, the brewery's owner, later in the show. The Alaska Craft Brew Festival will be holding its first ever summer edition at the Delaney Park Strip in Anchorage on Saturday, August 21st. There will be two sessions, one in the afternoon and one in the evening. Tickets are available on myalaskatix.com. There will be over 40 breweries, live music, and food trucks. On June 3rd, Naptown Brewing in Sterling took delivery of its brewing equipment. I plan to interview owner Jake Wallenbach as part of my July show. 49th State Brewing in Anchorage has announced that it will be closed on Mondays and Tuesdays due to staff shortages. The brew pub hopes to resume serving 7 days a week later in the summer. On Sunday, June 4th, Grace Ridge Brewing broke ground on its new location at 870 Smoky Bay Way in Homer. Tickets are now on sale for the 2021 Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival, which takes place on Saturday, August 14th at the Soldotna Sports Center. The $50 general admission runs from 6 to 9 p.m. and includes a commemorative glass and 8 4-ounce beer samples. For $75, you can start an hour early at 5 p.m. and enjoy unlimited sampling until the general session starts at 6 p.m., after which you will get the same 8 4-ounce samples. All proceeds go to support local Soldotna Rotary projects. Tickets are available online. The owners of Falling Rock Taproom, the legendary Denver beer bar, have announced that it is closing permanently on Sunday, June 27th. On their website, owners Chris, Steve, and Al Black blamed many factors besides COVID-19, including a year-long construction project that caused a 30% drop in sales, changes in the neighborhood, continued increasing competition from suppliers, challenges in finding kitchen staff, and rapidly increasing costs. Falling Rock became a legend for its amazing activities during the great American beer festivals each year and was perpetually in the list of the top 10 beer bars in the U.S. It will be missed. Alaskan Brewing Company has created a new product, a kelp and Alaskan amber ale barbecue sauce. Created in the test kitchens of Barnacle Foods, these two local businesses will be rolling out this tasty and uniquely Alaskan sauce nationwide via e-commerce platforms just in time for the grilling season. Speaking to this joint venture, John Blasco, Alaskan Brewing's business project manager, stated, quote, "We are thrilled to be partnering with Barnacle on this exciting new addition to their incredible lineup of kelp-based products. Barnacle's mission and growth has been inspiring to watch over the last several years, and we are proud of this authentic Alaskan partnership with another local manufacturer," end quote. In combining the classic Alaskan Amber Ale with the sustainable kelp-based sauce talents of Barnacle Foods, the two companies have created a uniquely Alaskan barbecue sauce. Crafted sustainably, ethically, and locally, the new sauce highlights the best parts of both companies while incorporating Alaskan ingredients. The sauce is a great opportunity for barbecue enthusiasts to experiment with authentic Alaskan flavors moving into summer. The sauce is available for purchase at www.barnaclefoods.com. That's it for this month's news. Up next, we've got an interview with Damian Delgado, the head brewer of Bear Paw River Brewing in Wasilla, Alaska. Hey, Damian, how you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you doing, Bill?
Excellent, excellent. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us. The big news, where do you guys stand on opening the new location?
That is the big question. Right now, we're about 95% done with the brew house and getting that all hooked up. Little things like getting the boiler going would help. So once we get that going, we can start doing some runs and hopefully start brewing here next week, fingers crossed. Okay. But projection is probably late July, early August.
Okay. And your new location is right on the main drag there on the parks in Wasilla, right? Right by the train station?
Yeah, right where actually the Wasilla train depot used to be.
Okay.
They moved it just a couple years ago.
Oh,
but
okay.
Yeah, you can see us right on the highway. If you're heading north towards Denali, as soon as you cut past Main Street there, we're on the left. We're really excited about the new location.
And from the pictures I've seen, it's like a blue metal building, right, with a wooden, sort of a wooden portico?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We have a little wooden vestibule there to, you know, kind of walk in and kind of a Arctic entry. And,
okay.
Big blue box of a building, but we are excited to get things going there.
So, and I know you guys have a fancy new pizza oven, so obviously you're going to be serving pizza. Can you give us any other ideas? I realize you're brewery side of the house, not kitchen side of the house, but give us any idea of what else you guys are going to be serving?
Yeah, I think for now, at least when we're starting, it's going to be mostly pizza, soups, and salads. We hired a great kitchen manager and pizza chef, his name's Aaron. We're really excited. He's got a lot of pizza experience. He's worked on a couple, you know, high-end restaurants in Anchorage, and we're very excited to get working with him. We've done a few kind of employee appreciation party kind of things where we're sampling the pizzas, and they're coming out great. And we're just really excited to get all staffed up and hit the ground running.
So now let's talk about the important thing. Tell me about the new brew house that you got.
Yes. It's a 30-barrel brew house. Specific Mechanical is the manufacturer. They're out in Canada. Three times bigger than the brew house we have now. We are going to start with 60-barrel fermenters. We have three 30-barrel fermenters at the original location that we will move over there. And hopefully... we'll start getting brewing here soon and start filling up those. The sooner we fill up those tanks, the sooner we can open.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to the challenge of the of it all.
Now, you wanted everybody to know, right, the original location is not closing. That's going to stay in operation, right?
We are going to stay in operation at the original location. We have so many great customers that come in all the time that live just around the corner and, you know, they just enjoyed coming in every day. We're going to try to hopefully get some barrels, do some barrel aged beers. I can start finally doing some kettle sours, things like that. We'll still brew our core beers, Frontiersman, Railroad, Matt Made, and Hatcher Pass here as well as over there. But it gives me, it'll be kind of my pilot system for
the
new
place. That's what I was going to say. It would make sense that you would use the smaller brew house for your more esoteric or experimental brews that you want to do, and then use your bigger brew house to kind of pump out the flagship guys that you got to make and can and everything like that. Are you guys getting a new or different canning line or anything like that, since you're going to have this increased capacity?
Currently, I think it got shipped this week actually, but we're getting a Cody line,
okay,
which as far as I'm concerned is pretty much top of the line. We'll go from about 6 cans a minute to 60 cans a minute. So that'll help things move along a little faster. We're very excited about that. We really are. We're going to keep the canner we have here at the original brewery, and still can 16-ounce one-offs here. Unfortunately, with the way the laws work here in Alaska, we can't make a beer in one spot and sell at the other. Uh-huh. So we will be, like I said, still making Frontiersman and all the core beers at both locations, but you know they can only be sold at that location that you make it at.
So, speaking of brewing and everything, why don't you tell the folks your background? How did you get into this crazy game? Do you come out of a home brewing background? Have you had any kind of formal training? How'd you end up making beers in Wasilla?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I guess it started off with, obviously, I love beer, and I wouldn't say I'm cheap, but I'm frugal. So I realized brewing beer is less expensive than buying beer. So, you know, in your mind, you're thinking, you know, I'll just brew my beer and I'll never have to buy beer again. So I started home brewing, and then I quickly found out that I don't make beer as good as Sierra Nevada at that time. You know, I still want Sierra Nevada. I still want these big beers, these other beers. So it didn't really save me money. I actually probably spent more money on equipment and everything like that. But I fell in love with the brewing process. I grew up in San Diego, big beer city, knew a lot of people at breweries. I worked downtown San Diego for 15 years, knew a lot of the breweries in that area, talked to a lot of the brewers. Everyone was really helpful asking with any question I had, and it was really nice. It's a really cool brewing community in San Diego.
I haven't been to San Diego for many a moon, but I can remember when my ship pulled in there in the early 90s that it was a very cool beer town. So
it you know, with Ballast Point and Stone getting so big, it just kind of blew up. Mm-hmm. There's so many great breweries. A lot of them are in walking distance from each other. It's just the whole county of San Diego is just an amazing brew community. In 2015, I moved to the Valley here. My sister and brother-in-law were up here with their family, and I needed a change. I got tired of the job I was working at, so I wanted something new. I had no idea what I was going to do here, but I'd figure something out. And I got hired pretty much right away when I moved up here at the homebrew store in Wasilla. Worked there for a year. Bearpaw was opening while I was working there. So I would always come by the brewery and buy beers and get to know Jake and Jack and Jed, and just kind of always show my face in the brewery, and you know, and kind of weaseled my way into getting hired as a brewer. And then after a couple years doing that, they made me the head brewer.
Cool. So, like any professional brewer, you'll brew what the public wants. But what, for your own, when you're home brewing and stuff like that, what's your kind of favorite beer? What really attracts you? You mentioned kettle sours, or, you know, what do you like to brew when you're brewing for yourself as opposed to, you know, trying to placate the public?
Definitely. I love, honestly, brewing for the public. It's something that I really do cherish. I love my IPAs, and I know everyone doesn't like IPAs, so I do like to make light beers as well. Our light beer Railroad, I mean, I usually have a keg of that at my house all the time. What I'm looking forward to in the original brewery is to do the stuff that we were a little nervous to do, like kettle sours and sour beers. Get some barrels in here and do some barley wines and Russian Imperial stouts and things like that. When it comes to favorite style to make, it's really hard to pick. It really is. It's such a wide variety of beers out there, and I want to make them all. I think what is difficult about living in Alaska is reading and hearing these beer blogs about beers that we just can't get up here, which is hard, because it's like, hey, I want to try that beer. I want to make that beer, but I want to try it first to make sure I'm making the right thing, which back home in San Diego, it's not a problem. You have access to almost anything. So whenever I do travel, I try to go to as many breweries as I can. I try to visit bottle shops, ask them what's popular, what are the kids buying right now, and go from there, really.
It's funny, you kind of described the situation that I kind of felt I was in the late 80s, early 90s when I first started getting into craft beer and homebrewing, because in those days, it wasn't that you were in Alaska. It's if you were anywhere, it was hard to find. You know, if you wanted to taste a Saison, unless you're going to visit Belgium, you better brew it yourself, because you just couldn't get them, that kind of thing. Yeah. So, I understand what you say when you read about new beer and you're like, I'd love to taste that, but it can't be had for love or money, at any of the local stores. So let me ask you another theoretical question. What is the style of beer that you would most like to brew if you thought you could sell it? Okay. In other words, what's the kind of beer that you really love, but you know that if you made a 30-gallon batch of it or even a 10-gallon batch of it, you would never be able to sell it because of it being too whatever for public taste? I'll ask you that question, because my answer for that one has been for years a mild, because I've been beating the drum trying to get brewers down here to brew a mild, which is a style of beer that I absolutely love. And which apparently they are convinced that if they were to brew a batch, nobody would buy it. So have you got a style of beer like that you would love to brew, but you know in your heart of hearts that if you did, you'd take a loss on it?
That's a good question. I'll have to think about that. If I had the means, I would try to do a lambic. If I had the means. I went and visited Belgium about 3 years ago, and toured Cantillon, toured Tréfontaine and Rodenbach, and Cantillon was just unbelievable. Their setup there is just incredible. And then I went to Austin and visited Jester King and just saw how their setup was basically the exact same lambic setup as Cantillon. And I mean, it would be an expensive beer to make just for that setup, but that would be the beer I would love to experiment with. I'd love to.
Would you like to make a Creek or a Frambois, or are you really going to be ambitious and try and make a Goose?
Oh, I would do the Goose. I go full throttle and do the barrel age 3-2-1 year and get a nice blend and really learn how to blend and really beef up my palate when it comes to those kind of beers. But with those Goose, you can always throw in some raspberries, throw in some cherries, and make a good Creek or Frambois. And it's one of my favorite beers to drink. When I first got hired here, I fantasized about taking Wort up to Hatcher Pass and get some of that nice bacteria and yeast in the air and let it do its thing and. You get all these, fantasies, when you get hired as a brewer, then really quick you realize that you're mostly cleaning tanks and dragging hoses around.
Right.
And Yeah,
I'd say somebody once said 90% of brewing is sanitation. So, but
yeah, we're glorified janitors. Yeah.
you don't have to, I don't think you have to have the full setup, because if I remember right, about 5 or 10 years ago, the first time Gabe Fletcher brewed any of those things, he took a couple of barrels and cut part of them open so they could lay on their side, and he filled it up with wort and he put it in the back of his pickup truck and drove it up somewhere. So,
absolutely what I was thinking of.
Setup he's got now, obviously, is light years beyond that. But
I think he just got his cool ship in here like a few weeks ago. So.
Right. So if you just want to knock it out one time, you don't necessarily have to have all the bells and whistles. But that would be a fun. That would certainly be a really a fun project. And you really have to tip your hat to, like you say, like Chantillon, those guys that have been doing it for a couple hundred years. So
absolutely.
So yes. Looking ahead, what have you got? You got any interesting beers planned on the horizon? Obviously, you're talking about you're wanting to get some kegs and doing some barrel aged stuff. I'm sorry, kegs. I mean barrels and doing some barrel aged stuff.
Yeah.
But you got anything else? You know, relatively new in the offing for the next month, 2-3 months that people should be looking out for?
Yeah, well, right now, this week, last weekend, we just released, it's a triple hazy IPA, we call it Nether. It's a collaboration with some artists and an author. It's came out really, really good, and we're really excited about it. So we have cans of that here now. Right now, to be honest, my one-off brewing is put on a hold. Big part of the summer is keeping our distributor happy. Mm-hmm. So I'm making a lot of our core beers, trying to get those canned and kegged up and out on the shelves for people to buy. And,
so you've seen demand ramp back up again then after the big COVID shutdown of
yes.
Of tap accounts.
It has wrapped up. Absolutely. It's ramped up quite a bit, actually. Kind of took us by surprise, which is a great problem to have. So I'm not going to complain about that. But yeah, people are buying beer again. Tourists are coming back. It's a really good thing for the state.
So let me ask you another important question. Are you guys going to make it down here for our Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival on the second Saturday in August?
I sure hope so.
Okay.
Yeah, I sure hope so.
All right. Well, hey, Damien, thank you so much for taking time out of your day. Really appreciate it. You got anything else that I forgot to cover that you want to make sure our listeners know about?
Well, I guess all I can say is just keep following us on Facebook and Instagram, Bear Paw River Brewing Company. We're really excited about the new property. I'm really excited to start brewing on this new system, and we hope to be open, like I said, late July, early August. It's going to be a great spot if you're heading north to Fairbanks or Denali or something. We're right there. Stop in and grab a pie and some beers and enjoy yourself. You know, that's what we're doing it for the community. We're doing it for the state. We really, really enjoy making beers and seeing everyone in the tap room being happy and having a good time. You know, we really do pride ourselves in being a family location that, you know, it's a good spot to bring your kids.
Well, good. Hopefully in our July show, I can announce that you guys are open. But
yes.
Anyway, good luck with getting the boiler online. I spent a lot of time in my life messing with steam, so I know it can be tricky sometimes. But good luck with that. And like I said,
Thank you very much. Hopefully
within a month, we'll be saying that you guys are open for business.
Yes, hopefully. Fingers crossed. I think we're going to do it.
All righty.
We're going to do it.
Thanks, Damien. Take care. Have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. In our next segment, let's talk about aging beer in whiskey barrels. If you've tried much craft beer at all, it's a safe bet that you've run into at least one, and probably many more than one, beer that was aged in a barrel that previously contained some sort of strong spirit, typically whiskey. In this segment, I'd like to talk a little bit about what whiskey is and why barrels that previously contained it are popular choices for brewers looking to age their beers. For starters, let's compare whiskey and beer. These two beverages are best understood as brothers from the same mother. Both are born of the same source, fermented grain, but diverge as soon as they leave the fermenter. Beer continues its journey as it is to be packaged and consumed. Whiskey, on the other hand, endures a trial by fire in that it is distilled and is then confined to barrels for years before consumption. You should also be aware that whiskey is the same sort of generic term as beer. When we just say beer, we're glossing over the distinctions between lagers and ales, as well as the numerous beer styles within each of those broad categories. Similarly, there are many dozens of categories of whiskeys around the world, some of which are very different from each other. However, two common whiskey varieties stand out when it comes to barrel aging beers. The first is Scotch whiskey, or more specifically, single malt Scotch whiskey. Single means that all the whiskey in the barrel is from one distillery, and malt means that it comes entirely from malted barley. Legally, all Scotch whiskey needs to be aged at least 3 years and be made entirely of malted barley. Additionally, single malt Scotch whiskey must be aged and bottled in Scotland, and it must also be distilled in a pot still rather than a column still. Since the only source of used Scotch whiskey barrels is Scotland, the difficulty and expense of obtaining them limits their use by American craft brewers, though they are still highly sought after. The more common choice is a barrel previously filled with our second whiskey variety, bourbon. To be called bourbon, a whiskey must be made from at least 51% corn, be made in America, and aged in brand new barrels made from American white oak and charred on the inside. An easy way to remember the distinction is all bourbons are whiskeys, but not all whiskeys are bourbons. Because each batch of bourbon requires brand new barrels, its production naturally generates used barrels which previously held spirit. Why use barrels at all in whiskey making? Well, they were likely what we would call a happy accident. Whiskies of all varieties were stored in barrels for convenience first, since several centuries ago, when distillation first became common, that was the only way to store them. It was only later discovered that time in barrels greatly improved the flavor of the spirit stored in them. Unaged whiskey is called white dog or white lightning, and if, like me, you've ever had any straight off the still, you know that it's got a real bite. It tastes hot, harsh, and doesn't have any of the vanilla and other flavor notes we associate with good whiskey. Take it from me, it's not nearly as pleasant to drink as good bourbon. So why do brewers age beer in whiskey barrels? Well, one of the roots of the barrel-aged flavor profile that brewers are after is that traditional enemy of beer taste and freshness, oxygen. Normally, brewers do everything possible to protect finished beer from exposure to oxygen, as it causes beer to go stale and acquire a flavor reminiscent of wet cardboard. However, due to their porous nature, oak barrels allow a very small amount of oxygen to pass through them. This limited oxygen ingress turns out to be just the right amount to mellow the flavors of the beer over time. Hop bitterness softens considerably over time, malt flavors can step further forward, and flavors can marry into complex sherry-like notes that seem more than the sum of their parts. Carefully managed, many beers will develop positive flavor characteristics rather than the musty, papery flavors associated with more violent, uncontrolled oxidation. The traces of bourbon remaining in the barrels will also be leached out by the fresh beer and add to its flavor profile. The exact impact on the beer's final flavor is a function of just how much bourbon was left in the barrel, i.e., how wet it was, plus the exact flavor profile of the whiskey itself. Some brewers have strong preferences for barrels from a particular distillery based on their perception that barrels that previously held that distillery's products are a particularly good fit for their beers. It should be noted that brewers also use barrels that previously held wine and other spirits, or even brand new barrels, but that's beyond the scope of what I'm talking about today. A wide variety of beer styles are aged in oak barrels, but the top choices for aging in used whiskey barrels are big beers like Imperial Stouts, Belgian Quads, and barley wines. The flavors extracted from these barrels are usually pretty intense, and bigger beers are more suited for that relationship. Also, due to their porous nature, barrels are much more prone to infection by strains of wild yeast or bacteria. Strong beers with their high alcohol content do a good job of defending themselves against the risk of unwanted microbes. If you're interested in tasting some beer aged in whiskey barrels, there are many choices from our local breweries. Each winter, St. Elias Brewing typically offers its award-winning Moose Juice Barley Wine on tap. Midnight Sun Brewing has its award-winning Arctic Devil Barley Wine in 12-ounce bottles. Bear Paw River Brewing offers a barrel-aged Wee Heavy Scotch Ale and its Old Matanuska-made barrel-aged Imperial Stout. 49th State Brewing occasionally offers its Seward's Folly Imperial Stout in a barrel-aged version. Anchorage Brewing Company has its Time Waits for No One Imperial Stout, with different batches being aged in barrels that previously held a variety of spirits, from Laphroaig Single Malt Scotch to Woodford Reserve Bourbon to even port wine. However, what may be the biggest opportunity to taste barrel-aged beers in Alaska happens each December when Glacier Brewhouse in Anchorage holds its 12 Days of Barley Wine, serving beers produced in its famous Wall of Wood. This is the nickname for the over 50 wooden casks in a chilled vault beneath the brewhouse where special release beers are aged. During the 12 days, four different barrel-aged beers are released each day to the public. It's a mini festival of barley wines, imperial stouts, and Belgian quads, each aged in a different cask. Even if you can only be in Anchorage for one day of the 12, it's well worth checking out. So that's the word on barrel-aged beers. If you enjoy big beers with notes of oak and whiskey, you should definitely give one of these beers from our local breweries a try.